So how many hunters do we have in the room? Raise your hand if you like to hunt. Okay, I like to hunt, but I'm not a hunter. I got to go for the first time recently. I wish I had a bunny hunting story for you, right? You know, because it would fit with the theme. But I don't. I've been duck hunting once. I won't tell you about that story. That was interesting. But I also went turkey hunting recently on our staff retreat that we had. And I was so excited to go out, and we went to Ken Whaley's place, and he's got some land out, and man, it was beautiful, it was awesome. And the thing that I didn't know when I said, yes, I'll go turkey hunting, is that you've got to have a whole lot of gear. Like, for those of you who like turkey hunting, apparently turkey have really good eyesight. And so you have to dress like top to bottom camo. You have to like really try your best to blend in with the area. I didn't know what to do about my glasses, you know. I was just constantly thinking they're going to see my reflection of my big old glasses. Of course, I can't see anything. My lenses are huge and thick anyway. So I was, you know, I mean, by the time though, I should have brought a picture of what I looked like. I actually ended up looking okay. It didn't go too bad. Didn't kill anything, but I did see one turkey, so that was exciting. Didn't see any bunnies either, but something I was thinking about while I was out there, there is a point to this, something I was thinking about was, you know, we can't change the environment that we're in when you're hunting, right? You adapt to that environment. You put on the camo and you try to blend in with the surroundings that you're in because you're stepping into an environment that you cannot change. For those of you who aren't hunters, I thought of another illustration too. Avery and I love to go to zoos. How many of you like going to zoos? They're super fun. Love to do that kind of stuff. There's not a lot of bunnies at zoos either. But when it's a hot day and you're in the zoo and all these animals, I seem like I always go at the time where they're all sleeping. And it's so frustrating because you get out there and you're like, yes, we're going to see something awesome. And then they're all just taking a nap in the corner, and you like have to look in. Like the bear, every time, is right in that front corner, and I can't even see him. You know, I'm like peeking through the cracks of the fence, you know, trying to, oh, there he is. But there was one time that we were there, they were all sleeping, and so we decided to go and see the one animal that I feel like is always doing something at least, and it's the monkeys. Right? Like you go to the monkey cages, they're always having fun, they're always climbing on stuff, and they're interesting to watch. And so we go to the monkey cages, and one of the zoos that we went to had a certain kind of monkey I'd never seen before. They were very playful. It was interesting to watch because they had no tails. It was weird. And so I started reading the sign about it, and it was telling me that these monkeys, apparently the myth or the legend, and I don't know if it was true or not, but the legend goes that these monkeys used to live in a very cold climate, and they were high up in mountain ranges, and it would get so cold that they eventually evolved and they lost their tails. I thought it was really funny, you know, like they literally froze their tails off, you know. But I'm reading the sign about these monkeys, and I start reading it, and it has this statement that says, these monkeys have adapted to an environment that they could not change. And I think, you know what? Isn't that how we live life sometimes? Sometimes we find ourselves having to adapt to an environment that we cannot change. We figure out, man, I can't change the fact of what's around me, and so I'm just going to change myself. And I think it's interesting. Look at Mark chapter 10, and we're going to open up Mark chapter 10 and verse 46. Now, I want every eye in here on this text this morning. And so if there's a lot of times there's Bibles in the pews in front of you. If there's not, scooch over. If you have a Bible, scooch over. Don't ask them because that's just going to be awkward. Here, I'm taking the awkwardness out of it. Just scooch over if they don't have a Bible and hold it out and y'all can begin to read together. Don't even ask. All right. Every eye on the text. Mark chapter 10. I think we're going to see something in this text that is really special to you. We've been in our series, for those of you who haven't known, here at Leander, and it's called Follow Me. And that's where Jesus looks at us and he says, I want you to follow me. And Jesus is going to a whole lot of different places. And so, but we want to follow Jesus to where he's leading, right? And so that's our yearly theme. And this week we're going to follow him to the roadside. And I think you'll see something hopefully you haven't seen before. Look, start in verse 46 of Mark chapter 10. It says, then they came to Jericho. As Jesus and his disciples, together with a large crowd, were leaving the city, a blind man named Bartimaeus. Everybody say Bartimaeus. Bartimaeus, that is the son of Timaeus, was sitting by the roadside doing what? He's begging. And when he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." And many rebuked him. And they told him to be quiet. But he shouted all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." And Jesus stopped and said, "Call him." And so they called to the blind man. Who is the they? You ever thought about that before? Who's the they in the text? The people who just told him to be quiet. I love that part, right? Like the very people who are telling him, shut up, stop speaking, stop talking, be quiet. Jesus doesn't have time for you. And Jesus stops and says, no, I want you to go get him and bring him to me. You ever heard the scripture, I'll make your enemies a footstool? Jesus literally does that for this person in that moment. And man, there's just, Jesus, look, leave wrath for God, and he'll do it in great ways. And this is one of those instances. So back to the text, verse 49, Jesus stopped and said, call him. And so they called to the blind man, cheer up, get on your feet, he's calling you. In verse 50, throwing aside his what? His cloak, he jumped to his feet and he came to Jesus. What do you want me to do for you? Jesus asked him. Does Jesus need that? Does Jesus know what the man wants? Is Jesus asking a question because Jesus really needs to know the answer? Who's this question for? It's for the blind man. And so Jesus says, what do you want me to do for you? And the blind man said, Rabbi, I want to see. Go, Jesus said, your faith has healed you. And immediately he received his sight. And as our yearly theme is, he followed Jesus along the road. Because who doesn't want to follow the man who can do a miracle in your life? Amen? And so that's what he's doing. So listen, I'm going to tell you some things about Bartimaeus. Number one is that he had a name. So when I think about Bartimaeus, I don't see someone who is of low class and of low standing. Well, I do, because he's found on the roadside doing what? But I know that he was supposed to be somebody important. You know how I know that? Because he's got a name. Think about it. In Scripture, there's so many instances where you hear about people, but you never know their name. Right? Like the woman at the well, what's her name? Woman at the well. The woman with bleeding. It's the woman with blood. You've got the rich young ruler. What's his name? The rich young ruler. You know, you've got all these different people in Scripture who don't and aren't given names because they weren't someone that was going to be known. It wasn't a person that people would read the name and go, oh, I know who that is. But this is Bartimaeus. Not only is it Bartimaeus, but it's who? It's the son of Timaeus. You know Timaeus, the family line. You know old Timaeus. You remember, this is his boy, Bartimaeus. You know, the one who was going to do these great things and be this great person. And there was all this expectation on Bartimaeus to be somebody. But what? He was blind. It's one of the saddest texts in all of Scripture. He was supposed to do something great, but he was blind. I don't know what his family was known for, but they were known. It could have been in government. It could have been in ruling of the city. He could have just had a lot of money and been wealthy. He could have owned a large company of some kind. I don't know what it was, but he was supposed to follow in his father's footsteps. But oh, Bartimaeus, there he is on the side of the road, having to hold out his cup because he can't even take care of himself, begging. One of the saddest stories in all of Scripture. Isn't it interesting how his condition contradicted his position? His condition of blindness contradicted the position and status that he was supposed to have in society. And I think sometimes, doesn't it feel like that's what happens with us? Man, I could be somebody great. My family, they've done a lot of great things. My father, my brother, my sister, all these people are doing so much more than I am because I've got this condition that contradicts my position. And sometimes, do you ever just feel stuck? You ever just feel like you're stuck in a situation that you cannot change? And so that's Bartimaeus. So number one, he had a name, but he had no hope. Okay? When you're blind today, is there hope for you to be able to function in society? Absolutely. There's blind people that I know that can run circles around me. Right? What are some of the ways, I want a little interaction. What are some of the ways that blind people can function in our society today? What are things that they have or tools that they have? Shout it out. Braille. Absolutely. So they can read. They have a cane. They have a walking stick and a cane. And I don't know if this is true or not. You tell me. But can't they tap that cane and somehow that can help them to see their surroundings better by listening to the echoes of things near them? If it doesn't echo, then they're out in the open space. But if it echoes off of something, they can know, okay, there's a wall here or there. Isn't that how that works? It's really interesting. So you have the cane. You have Braille. What else do they have? Seeing eye dogs. They have seeing eye dogs. I saw one the other day. It was really interesting to me. And so they have an animal that can help guide them and lead them to where they need to be. Is there anything else you can think of? Do what now? Artificial intelligence. That's a really big word. And we're going to talk after this, and he's going to explain exactly what that means to me, because I am a simple man, okay? And all of you are laughing because you know what that means, but I don't. But yes, artificial intelligence. What? I'm gonna put you on the spot. What do you mean? Okay, wow. I didn't think about that. I understand that phrase. Self-driving cars. Those things scare me to death, but I guess that is a scary thought. I'm just saying, but yes, that is true. I'm sure it can actually happen. I'm just, in my mind right now, I'm thinking about the illustration that I've used before. Here, I'll tell it to you real quick. Oh, I'm getting off topic. But it's the story about the people who are going to fly. And they're sitting on a plane, and this plane is full. It's a passenger plane. And all of a sudden, the pilot comes walking in late. And it's he and his co-pilot. And they're walking through down the aisles, and they're stumbling all over everything and tripping all over everything. And you're like, what in the world's going on? And they stumble right into the cockpit, and you're thinking, what in the world is going on? And the attendant says, oh, well, these guys are blind. About that time, it starts to take off down the runway, and you're going, what in the world's about to happen? And you're getting closer and closer. The plane's speeding up faster and faster, and you can see the end of the runway is coming nearer and nearer, and everybody starts to panic, and they're going, is this really happening? And all of a sudden, once it looks like they're about to crash, everybody just goes, ah, and they start to scream. And about that time, the plane just lifts off. And up in the cockpit, the co-pilot looks to the pilot and says, one day they're not going to scream, and we're not going to know when to take off, and everything's going to go wrong. Right? Self-driving cars, Braille, seeing eye dogs, the walking canes. There's ways to function in our society, right? But for him, when you were in that society, when you got sick with something, you couldn't just walk to the nearest pharmacy and go get some medicine. You couldn't walk to the doctor's office and they give you a shot and everything gets better. A lot of times when you were sick or infected or some problem was in your life, there was a lot of times there was no help. And for blindness, there was nothing for them. There was no hope. And so every day he goes to the roadside and he's sitting and he's begging because he has no hope. And you know what I think? I think the worst thing about his blindness isn't his blindness. I think the worst thing about his blindness is that he's sitting on a roadside. Let me ask you something. What do you think? Is this a roadside where just a few people walk down? What do you think? This is the busiest roadside he can go to. Because if I'm going to beg, I want as many people as I can go to. He's sitting in the busiest part of the city, and he's begging, hoping that somebody can help him in his situation. But I think the worst part is not the blindness. I think the worst part is that he has to listen. He might not be able to see, but he can still hear. And he's got to listen to everybody else passing by. And he's got to hear them doing life, living life. Doing church, living church, going and doing and participating and seeing things. Hey, look at that. Hey, son, do you see that? And he's sitting there listening to this and he can't see anything. And he's watching as everyone else, and it's not watching, he's listening as everyone else is passing by on the roadside, doing things and living a life that he can't live. And sometimes I think that's the worst part about the conditions that we face in our life, because there are some things in life that has such a grip on us, whether it's sins or whether it's just situations that have happened to us that we can't change, where we can't participate in certain things that others can participate in. And instead, we sit on the roadside and we watch as everyone else goes on with their life. We feel stuck. Have you ever been there? And that's where we find Bartimaeus. Blind and on the roadside. Now, I know that he's got two things. He might not have much because he's begging, but he's got two things. What do you know from the text that he has? Look back at your text. What's he got? His cloak. He's got his coat. What's a coat used for? A blanket. It keeps you warm because it's going to be really cold out there by the road. And if I can't change the situation that I'm in, I'm just going to learn to adapt like the monkeys to the environment that I cannot change. I'm going to put on my coat and I'm going to just try to make this as comfortable as it can be because it's really cold out there. What else would a beggar have? He'd have a voice, and we're going to see that he learns to use that voice very soon. What is this? What's the cup used for? I'm just hoping there's going to be somebody out there that's going to walk by and put something in my cup that's going to help me to get better. No, just to help me survive until the next day. Put something in my cup that's going to give me a little bit more strength. Give me at least enough money to where I can survive until tomorrow. Because tomorrow, guess what I know? I'm coming back to the same roadside with the same cup and the same coat that I've always had to sit and to hold out my cup, hoping that people in the world are going to pass by and somehow put something in here that's going to help me in the situation that I cannot change. Everybody's got a cup. And everybody's got a coat. What's yours? I'll tell you a story about my family. By the way, my little brother's here this morning. His name's Jaden. I'm really excited that he's here. And so he can attest to this too. For 8 years, my family, we were on our street side. And we were begging. And our situation wasn't blindness, it was alcoholism. My mom struggled with alcoholism for 8 years. Now, I come from a family where my dad is a minister, he's a preacher, and he's trying to minister and take care of all these other people. And for 8 years, the preacher's wife is struggling with alcoholism, and nobody knows. And it was one of the most difficult things that our family ever went through. And there were moments, it just kept getting worse, and it kept getting worse, and it kept getting worse. But mom, she's holding out her cup on the side of the road, and the world's passing by, and they're going to put something in your cup that's going to try to make you better. I promise you, the world's really good at telling you, oh, if you'll just do this, if you'll just wear this. I saw a deodorant commercial the other day that was telling you, if you wear this deodorant, you're going to have all the women that you want in the world. What in the world are we doing? The world is telling you all these lies, and they're throwing all this stuff in your cup, and Satan is so good at putting all these things in your cup that says, if you'll just do this, if you'll just take this, it'll get better. And for 8 years, the world and Satan was throwing alcoholism in my mom's cup and saying, hey, if you take this, it'll help the pain. If you take this, then you don't have to, you can just pass out and forget all the things that you've been doing, all the way that your family feels, all the terrible things that are going on. You can just pass out and you can forget that, and the pain will go away. And isn't it interesting that the world is really good at throwing stuff in your cup that never heals you, but it always just prolongs the situation that you're in? But you're in an environment that you can't change. You're stuck on the roadside. You don't know what else to do. I can't open up about this stuff. If I let people know that the preacher's wife is struggling with alcoholism, what's going to happen to my dad's job? He's going to lose it. You know, is the church going to deal with it with grace? Are they going to understand that the preacher's wife is... No. And so then, what's our cup? Our cup is just saying, put the mask on. Put the mask on. Go to church and smile and act like everything's good. Go on Easter Sunday and put your nice stuff on and go. And all the time, people don't know what's really going on in my situation and in my family life because the world has told me, just hide it and don't let people know. Protect yourself. Do what's best for your family. And don't worry about... Man, they're really good at throwing stuff in your cup. And 8 years, we did this. And some of you are in that same situation, and you hadn't even opened up about it yet. And I know what you're going through. And some of you are sitting in here and you're going, you know what? 8 years is nothing. 8 years is nothing. Because my family's been dealing with this for a lifetime. And it's not just alcoholism. If you knew what I was going through, Nathan, you'd be thinking differently right now. And so you got your cup, and you got your coat, and you sit on the roadside, and you watch as everybody else goes on and is living a life that you can't participate in because you've got something in your life that's holding you back. For some of you, it's a situation that you're in because you're the one who's struggling, but you're the one with an addiction, you're the one with a problem, you're the one with some kind of sin in your life that's infecting you that you feel as if you can't open up about. And for some of you, you're in a situation that you can't change, but you didn't even necessarily cause it. Yeah, I think about this man. How did he get to that roadside every day? You think he walked by himself? I don't think so. I don't think so at all. See, I think there's more people in this story that you hadn't heard about. I think there's more people that aren't mentioned here because I think he's got some friends or some family members in his life that say, okay, I'll walk you out there, but you got to be dressed at this time because I'm going to walk you on my way to work, but I'll help you get there and I'll set you down by the roadside. And for, I don't know how long he's had this blindness, but for me, in my mind, I believe he was born with it. I believe this is something he struggled with his whole life. And somebody in his life said, I'm taking you to that roadside every single day. And they watch as he's holding out his cup and people are putting stuff in his cup. But you know what? I don't know what else to do. I'm just going to take him to the roadside and I'm going to set him there because that's all you can do. And for 8 years, my family would just, we would talk with my mom and say, Mom, we need to open up. We need to let things. And, no, we can't. And for 8 years, we struggled here and we would just take her to the roadside. We just bring her to church with us. We tell her we love her. We would do all that we could to help her in the situation that she was in. And the same thing is true for Bartimaeus. Until one day. Everybody turn and look at your neighbor and say, today is my day. Oh, say it like you mean it. Today is my day. That's right. Today's your day. This day started different than any other day in his life. Because the blind man may not be able to see, but he could still hear. And God can always use what you have to bring about a miracle in your life. He's not looking to use something that you don't have. Sure, you may not be able to see. Sure, you may not be able to function as well as somebody else can function. But God's not looking to use something you don't have. He's looking to use something that you do have. And the blind man heard that there was a man named Jesus who's coming by my roadside today. And I'm here to tell you this morning that there is a moment of deliverance for you in any situation that you're in. Jesus is coming by. His tomb is not empty, and he's walking our streets with us today. And he's going to walk right by your street. He's going to pass you by. Moments of deliverance from the most impossible situations in your life are going to come because Jesus is bigger than any impossible situation. Jesus makes the impossible possible because of the empty tomb. And this day started different because I've heard that there's a man named Jesus, and Jesus, I've heard that he can do things. I've heard that he heals people. I've heard that he's walked on water. That Jesus is coming. Yes, that's the one, Bartimaeus. Shut up. Stop talking. Jesus is coming. Jesus is coming. And all of a sudden, he's got a little bit of hope. Because for the first time in his life, he thinks, I've even heard that this man could heal the blind. I've even heard that he could raise people from the dead. That Jesus is coming by today. And so this day started different than any other day. And so Bartimaeus has finally got some hope. And I love this, when you finally get a little bit of hope to get out of the situation that you've been facing for years and years, or maybe it's your whole life, there's something that begins to stir inside of you. And if you've ever been relieved from a place in your life, if you've ever had the cup and have the coat and been in that situation by your roadside of life, and you've made it through, you know what I'm talking about, don't you? Because there's that day where it all begins to turn around. And that's the day that Jesus walks by. And so here he is. And it says, verse 47, look at your text again, please. Verse 47, when he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, what did he do? He began to whisper. No. He begins to shout, Son of David, have mercy on me. Have mercy on me. Jesus, please. Because when you're in a desperate situation, you don't cry out like this. You find your voice, right, David? You find your voice and you say, God, please. I need you. And when you cry out to him, I love this next part. Look at it. Look at it. Verse 48. Many people rebuked him and they told him to shut up. Jesus doesn't have time for you. But he shouted all the more, Son of David, have mercy on me. And Jesus did what? He stopped, because when he hears his children crying out for help, we have a God who doesn't walk by. We have a God who stops, and he turns and he looks at the blind man and he says, call him. Tell him to come to me. And the ones who have been telling him to be quiet help him up, and they say, hey, be of good cheer. Get on your feet. Jesus is calling you. This is your moment. I promise you, moments of deliverance are coming for you in whatever situation it is. And it may seem impossible. It may be a sickness. It may be a sickness that you have. It may be a sickness in your family. It may even be the big scary C word of cancer. It may be divorce that is around your corner. Maybe you've experienced divorce in your own life. Maybe it's in your parents' life. And there's nothing that you can do to change the situation that you find yourself in. It may be alcoholism, pornography, lust. It may be anger. I don't know what it is for you. Maybe it's the loss of a job or a difficult job where you're having to go, but you're not enjoying what you're doing. I don't know what it is in your life, but there's things that we face. And I'm telling you, in those moments, Jesus is coming. And he's going to pass by, but he's not here. Listen, he's not here to stay. He's passing by. And so, are you going to take the opportunity? A moment of deliverance shows up for blind Bartimaeus, and people call him and they say, oh, Bart, come on, get up. Get up and come to Jesus. And in that moment, this is where it gets really deep. Bartimaeus has a big decision to make. In order to come to Jesus, I've got to put down my cup. I've got to take off my coat. But this is all I have. This has become my way of life. I don't know anything else other than this. And if I give up my coat and I give up my cup and I give up my spot on the road and this whole Jesus thing doesn't work out for me like you're saying it will, Nathan, then what? Then what? Because I may be miserable, but at least I've learned how to adapt to the environment that I couldn't change. But if I go to Jesus, he says, you've got to come to me and you've got to leave everything behind. You've got to follow me with everything, with reckless abandon. And you've got to leave every cup and every coat back behind. And you've got to shed yourself of everything and say, I'm coming to you, Jesus. And so the question for Bartimaeus is, will I take off the coat, and will I throw down the cup? And look at the next verse. Verse 50. We'll start at verse 49. Jesus stops. He looks at him, says, come here. And so they called the man. They said, cheer up, get on your feet. He's calling you. And verse 50 says, and throwing aside his cloak, he jumped to his feet and he came to Jesus. He said, you know what? I don't care if this whole thing doesn't work out, because I'm ready to risk everything I've got. I'm ready to risk the cup, the spot, the coat. I'm coming out, Jesus. I'm coming out of my coat. I'm done with this life. Jesus, I'm coming to you. He says, I don't know what's going to happen, but today things will change. That's what I know. It may get worse and hit rock bottom for me, or I may find healing, but Jesus, I'm choosing to trust you today. And he leaves that coat, and he sheds the coat, he throws down his cup, and he comes to Jesus, and you know the rest of the story. He finds sight for the first time in a long time. And some of you've been living a blind life, stuck on the side of the road in a situation you couldn't change. And if you want to see, you need to give it all over to a man named Jesus, who's walking our streets because his tomb is empty. And I promise you, a moment of deliverance will pass you by. Are you willing and are you ready to shed the coat and to put down the cup? It's getting a little hot in here. So, my mom, let me go back to my story. So for 8 years, we're holding out the cup, right? And we're stuck in a situation that we couldn't change. And finally, she decides, because let me tell you something. If you're the one, if you're the friends bringing somebody to the roadside, all you can do is set them down at the feet of Jesus. All you can do is place them on the roadside where you know that Jesus is coming by. All you can do is say you need to be going to church, not just because it's going through the motions, not because we're a bunch of plastic people who sit in a plastic church in plastic pews and we all look the same, but because there's a real man who can really help you in your real life situation that you're going through. And so all you do is you take those people and you say, come on. Come on. And you love them. And you bring them to Jesus and you wait. And after 8 years, maybe your story will end up like mine. Where my mom finally says, you know what, I can't do this anymore. I can't do this anymore. I've got to open up and tell people what's going on. I choose to quit. And I don't know what it's going to look like. Jerry, that's my dad's name, you may lose your job. My mom is a school nurse, by the way. You think they're going to have an alcoholic school nurse? I may lose my job, you're going to lose your job, and we're going to have nothing, but we choose to end this today. And so on that Sunday morning, my mom goes to church, and the preacher, my dad, takes the preacher's wife's response and says, we got to tell you something. We've been struggling here. And they shed the coat, and they threw down the cup, and they said, here we are. Here we are, church. And two rows of people responded with my mom that Sunday. Two whole rows of people said, you know what, we're coming with you. And they loved on her and they prayed for her. And the church said, you know what, we've never dealt with something like this before. We don't know what to do, but you know what, we're standing by you. And we're choosing to trust that grace is big enough to cover the sin in your life. And that church began to experience grace and healing in a way that I've never experienced before myself and that they sure had never experienced before. You know, I don't know about you and how it was for you growing up in church, but sometimes I felt like a response was where you would come down and you would just kind of give an announcement, you know? But that response changed the way I view responses. You know, it's not just some kind of announcement. It's a it's that, where you're saying, Jesus, I choose to give it all to you today. I choose to lay it down at your feet. There were three people who ran out of service that morning, by the way. Three different people. A woman and two men, different, not from the same family. They each went out one different door. Three men saw this happen. Three of our elders got up and they run after them. Meet them in the parking lot. And they had tears coming down their eyes and they said, I struggle with the same thing the preacher's wife does. There was something stirring within that. And let me tell you something. After that moment, my mom gets plugged into a rehab facility. And now she's 3 years sober. And she's leading an Alcoholic Anonymous meeting and helping other people who are struggling with the same problem that she had. And she's saying, don't buy into this anymore. Shed the coat. Throw down the cup. There's something greater, and his name is Jesus. And she's beginning to minister through her story to other women and other men who are struggling with the same thing that she is. That is the healing that Jesus offers for us. That's the moment of deliverance that can pass you by. And I'm not promising it will always work, because it's not on everybody else to choose it for somebody. It's on you to choose it for yourself. To say, I choose today to be a different person. Or I choose today to keep bringing them and keep loving them and staying with them by their side, even in the midst of this ugliness, trusting that Jesus will pass by and maybe, just maybe, they'll be willing to shed the coat and to throw down the cup. If you're here this morning and you're looking at your life and you know, you knew from the first moment that we started talking and we talked about blind Bart, you knew from that moment, oh, I know what my blindness is and I know what my cup is and I know what I've been doing to try to make this better. I'm telling you, today is your day and there's a moment for you and there's healing for you because the tomb is empty. And so listen, if you're here, I pray that you don't walk out of these doors without finding the strength and encouragement that comes from shedding your cloak and throwing down your cup and coming down here, not just because it's the right thing to do, but coming down here because you're wanting to declare to Jesus, I give it to you today. And you want to find healing in your life. And what I promise you is that at this church at Leander, we'll walk with you. We may not have the answers. We may not know exactly what to do or how to handle any situation, but we love broken people. We love broken people because Jesus uses broken people in his kingdom, and every single person in here is just as broken as you are. I know because I've cheated and I've read the Bible, and it tells you in Isaiah 59 that your iniquities have separated you from your God. It tells you in Romans that we're all sinners and fall short of the glory of God. So we all have a cup and we all have a coat at some point in our life. And so we're here to walk with you and to help you as you make that decision to say, Jesus, I choose to give it to you as my resurrected Lord today. If you need anything, won't you come as together we stand and sing.